And let's talk more about the Ebola case in Texas now and some of the other major stories of the week with Indira Lakshmanan, who covers foreign policy for Bloomberg News. She's with us from Washington. Indira, as we listen to that, one wonders why a local contractor crew is dealing with this and not some federal team that's going in there with hazmat suits to deal with the Ebola crisis. What's the conversation in Washington about this?
Look, I think that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, is ultimately going to be the one in charge of this. So, you know, I don't quite know what's happening there now, but I think that it's just a matter of time before they come in on this. I mean, the question is also, how is this spreading elsewhere? And just today in Washington, we got a report that there is a patient with Ebola-like symptoms who's being treated right here at Howard University Hospital. And this is a patient who had traveled to Nigeria recently. So I think the concern is moving beyond Dallas and to the question of whether other people who have traveled overseas could have contracted this disease and could be spreading it elsewhere. But I'd also like to caution listeners, let's remember that the few cases there have been already of Americans getting Ebola, being treated, then brought to America and treated here, they've all survived. So while this is a disease that only has a 50% survival rate in Africa, you know, think about how lucky we are to have the medical facilities we do and the healthcare we do, that at least in this country, the survival rate has so far been 100%.
Well, and so far, the health experts that we've talked to have said just that, that, you know, we've got a much more sophisticated hospital system in this country and way of dealing with this, that it won't turn into the crisis that it is in West Africa. Still, you see the images of people, as Robin said, going in without hazmat suits on, and you wonder if all of the necessary precautions are being taken. And by the way, we haven't heard much from President Obama on this week.
Well, we certainly did last week. I was at the UN General Assembly in New York last week, and one of the main topics of conversation that President Obama had world leaders talking about was Ebola. Remember, it was ISIS, Ebola, and climate change. And so there was a lot of focus on the fact that the Centers for Disease Control have predicted that between 500,000 and 1.4 million cases of Ebola could be in Liberia and Sierra Leone, just those two countries, by the end of January. So again, I mean, while I think it's very important to keep attention on proper procedures and controls within the United States, I think we also can't take our eye off the fact that there are 21,000 reported and estimated unreported cases of Ebola already in Liberia and Sierra Leone with a bad survival rate, and that could climb, you know, easily to 20,000 more, they're saying, by early November. So, you know, that's a concern. And the question is, you know, I was struck by this week, the story of how in Liberia, it's easier for them to deal with dead victims than it is to treat living ones. And that's really disturbing. And so my question is going to be, is President Obama going to commit more to the U.S. response to this worldwide?
Well, and as this is going on, of course, half a world away, there is another major story that's been developing this week, and that is what's happening in Hong Kong and these protests there. I want to listen here to what Vice President Joe Biden said yesterday about the situation in Hong Kong.
And as the world watches Hong Kong's young people take to the streets peacefully to demand respect for their own rights, we'll also never stop standing up for the principles we believe in that are universal: democratic freedoms and human rights.
What does the U.S. do on this point? Because obviously there are so many parts of the relationship between the U.S. and China. But at the same time, as Vice President Biden says there, he wants to stand with the people of Hong Kong.
That's right. I mean, this is a story I personally cannot take my eyes off of because I lived in Hong Kong for 7 years for the Boston Globe and lived through the handover and covered it. And I think, you know, we have to keep in mind Hong Kong's roots as an anti-communist refuge. This is a place where in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you had people literally fleeing communist China and swimming over to Hong Kong. So there is baked into the society a feeling that, you know, wanting a higher degree of rights, which Hong Kong, let's be fair, for the last 17 years, they have had civil liberties and an independent legal system and freedom of the press in ways that are not seen on the Chinese mainland. At the same time, when you talk about what's the U.S. role in this, I have to say, you know, we saw Secretary of State John Kerry just a couple days ago with the Chinese foreign minister. And while the U.S. can say that it wants China to respect democracy and respect the rights of these Hong Kong people, ultimately, China came back very strongly with the statement saying this is an internal matter of China. And I don't think they're going to allow meddling. And, you know, I'm worried about what's going to happen there, particularly when you see these, you know, gangs who've now turned against the Occupy protesters, the peaceful protesters. You have some people who might be paid, you know, agent provocateur who are getting involved, which would certainly give Beijing an excuse to crack down if they want to.
One more thing I want to ask you about Indira, and that is what's going on in the fight against ISIS. Do you see a coherent strategy emerging in this fight, which is, of course, being led by the U.S. at this point?
Look, I think it's really significant that Turkey's parliament voted this week to authorize Turkey to take military action in Syria and Iraq against ISIS. You know, it remains to be seen exactly what they're going to do. Turkey's a linchpin. But I do think that we see, you know, more and more countries coming together. Australia and Canada have both said that they're now going to be part of the coalition. The question is, where do we want to go with this coalition? We've said we can't wipe out ISIS completely. You know, the U.S., top U.S. officials and the president have said that it's not a short-term project. So if we're digging in for the long term, what's our strategy? And I think we're still waiting to hear in Washington from the president how he sees it in the longer term.
Indira Lakshmanan, who covers foreign policy for Bloomberg News, joining us from Washington at the end of this very busy week in the news. Indira, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeremy.